Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Your boy Sloan Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen. In the world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. I had to throw that little special intro in for the Bulldog. I mean, he's such a tremendous man. He's been on my show several times before, but I just love having him on. The stories can never be told enough. If you're listening on iHeart or Univision, please download this episode. The more downloads we get, the more we're in succession next week. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you first and foremost for following the show and showing the love that you do and letting me represent the fighters the best way I possibly can. With that being said, I want to welcome the one and only Scotty Olsen, the Bulldog. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing really well, Don. Thank you so much for having me on your show again. It's just it's a tremendous honor for me. So thanks.
I think it's the other way around, but I'll take that. You're welcome. So, you know, Scotty, I've asked people this question a couple times because us older dogs, we've never walked these paths before. We've never seen life like this. We don't have an understanding of it. How has the world being turned upside down affected Scotty Olsen?
Well, that's so, Don, just looking back at how I was a little bit before, you see, I'm a little bit, exclusive, I guess, or I stay by myself a lot. You know, I'm with my family. I might have a few friends I might hang out with, but I'm pretty reclusive. So I wasn't really probably the last decade, it's been a little bit harder for me to get out of the house and get going on stuff. So, and to go out and to put myself out there. I wasn't doing that very often. When I did, it was okay. I just didn't do it enough. So when the quarantine really came up and kind of put a halt to a lot of things, it wasn't such a big adjustment for me because I wasn't going out quite as much. So in terms of that, I feel that it didn't affect me as much as it does some of the people that are really outgoing, and I can be outgoing, but I'd rather be outgoing but containment, sort of outgoing but contained at the same time. So I, you know, instead of quarantine myself, an actual quarantine me. So it kept me in the house for a little bit longer, but I'm starting to poke my nose out of the house now.
Starting to poke it out just a little bit, are you?
Yeah.
I've always wanted to ask you this because we do come from different countries, and it's stupid because it's really the same landmass, just with a border between it. But what was it like for Scotty Olsen to come up in Canada to try to find that fame, that notoriety that most boxers in the UK or in the United States, you know, get? You know, because you think about Canada, you don't truly think back in your era of too many true champions, other than, I think, Lennox Lewis and Razor Ruddock. I mean, virtually there's not very many that came from Canada. So what was it like for you on your plight to gain recognition?
Well, you know, we had a decent amateur program when I was coming up, and a few of those old style, sort of old school trainers that really helped a lot of us fighters like myself. Lennox was in the same era. Egerton Marcus, just before me, were fighters like Matthew Hilton, Davey Hilton, so some of the Hilton boys. But we all had these trainers that were so good. So they put on a lot of shows. I shouldn't say a lot, but they put on quite a number of boxing shows throughout to build up your name as an amateur. I just trained hard. I did a really good job when I fought, and I liked what I did, and I enjoyed people cheering for me. So, you know, when it just helped me so much that, that I was supported, but I was started to win titles. And, you know, Canadian championships and all kinds of championships. So, you know, that was good. But I wasn't holding a hockey stick, Don. and I'd rather watch my hair fall out than watch a game of curling. So there weren't a lot of sports for me to do, Don. And so when I tried boxing, you know, all of a sudden I'm getting attention. After being in quite a number of sports, couldn't do a damn thing. Very well, couldn't do. I was not very athletic whatsoever. So I get into boxing, and all of a sudden, I'm getting notoriety. I couldn't believe it. So just getting into that little bit of fame here in Canada, it was nice. But it was really different once I turned pro and I went to Las Vegas, and I was treated really, really well in the United States. I couldn't have been more blessed, I don't think.
Yeah. You know, well, we got a problem here. You know, I don't know if I want to interview you, man. You're making fun of my sport of curling.
Oh.
That's one of my favorite. No, I'm joking, man. Oh, I love you.
Watch my hair fall.
You crack me up.
Oh, my God.
On a serious note, I can't. I still watched curling, but I don't know, for the life of me, I can't understand it, and I can't know. But, you know, there's something tremendous about you and the spirit and the man that you are, because you put yourself in a category that not many can walk in. You know, you look at either Razor Ruddock and you look at Lennox Lewis, and those are some of the bigger prominent names. But yet, here's Scotty Olsen. You've been recognized just as much and as for just as long as those other two tremendous champions. What does that mean now when you look back over your shoulder, Scotty, that not only did you make a name for yourself in the sport, but you've maintained such a rapport that you're classified in a category with some of the greatest in the sport, and you're still recognized till this day?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question, Don. Every question you have, like I try to do my homework before our shows together, make sure that I'm tight and ready to rock and roll. And every once in a while, a question, you know, because you ask questions sometimes that aren't typically ever asked, and they're not your regular questions. So I don't know if, like, I wasn't getting very much attention right at the get-go, being on the Canadian Olympic team or leading up to from 1985 up to 88 with the Olympics. So I was getting a little bit of attention, but a lot of it was going toward the big guys like Lennox Lewis, and rightfully so in some ways. But some of the bigger guys were, you could kind of tell it, they were overshadowing some of us lighter weight guys. And, you know, as I look back, I got a lot of attention once, actually, I think it was a little bit more once I turned pro, because I turned pro and now all my fights are on ESPN. I'm promoted by Top Rank Incorporated. And they helped me get my name out because they had all of my fights on ESPN, and that really, really helped catapult my whether it be what you call it, infamy or fame or stardom. You know, I like to call myself superstar, but you know, so with Top Rank, they just did a remarkable job. So you could be a fighter, you could have, you know, 30, 40 fights off of TV, so they're not televised, and then nobody knows about you. But you can be a fighter like I was, and all of a sudden you have your first, you know, 15 or 20 fights all on television. That really helps gaining a bit of a fan base. And for that, I just couldn't be more happy about, you know, that really helped help that, Don.
I feel you. I don't know. You're one of my favorites, but I kind of disagree with you a little bit. This is the first time I'm going to kind of disagree with Scotty ever. You know, to me, one of your most tremendous moments was back in 1986. And we can go back to Edinburgh, Scotland. You fought Mark Epton. What was that moment like? Walk me and my listeners through what it was like to get that win against Mark Epton in 1986.
Wow, that really brings back something, Don. You know, like my first fight was with this really tough guy. Like, he was tough, tougher than nails, and I didn't know he was tough going into the fight. So I took the fight to him, and I stopped him in the first round, I guess it was. So his name was Johnston Todd, and just a tough nut. And I didn't know he was tough until about 3 weeks ago. I didn't understand how good he was, and I guess he was a pretty solid guy, so I stopped him early. And so then I have to fight Mark Epton. Mark Epton, he had been not only just the champion of England, but British champion, and you know, some international experience. Really, you know, those. Any, if you're from the UK, you always come in shape, and you always come ready to fight. And Mark Epton, he was a very upright kind of fighter, you know, maybe like Ken Buchanan sort of, and busy and could take a punch, but busy. I was able to drop him a couple times and, you know, win decisively the first two rounds. And I'm pretty sure I lost the third round. Yeah, very much like the Olympics when I fought Wayne McCullough. So in the Olympics, I fight Wayne McCullough, and so I win the first two rounds, and I put him down once with a body shot or maybe twice, and then Wayne keeps coming at me. He keeps coming in the third round, and both of those fights against British fighters were very similar because they were in such great condition. They weathered the storm. And Wayne McCullough, he was like a buzzsaw. So I'd give him a beating basically for two rounds. And then he comes back and wins the last round, in my opinion. And I you know, and so Mark Epton at the Commonwealth Games was very much like that. Just busy, 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 and throwing a million punches. And it didn't matter. They didn't care if you hit him. And if he knocked him down, they were getting back up. But it was incredible.
You know, there was a statement once said about you, and it kind of tickled me because I know you, and you're such a a kind, kindred man. But you get you in the ring, and you're a little bit of a different story. But at one point, people said they've never seen a 95-pound man knock out anybody before. But Scotty Olsen did it. What was it like for you to show the world that dynamite truly does come in small packages?
That didn't take me very long, Don. You know, but I had a good coach, and his name was Paul Horty. Always got to give him my credit or all the props I can possibly throw his way. But when, you know, in my first fight, so I fought like a little bit of an older, little heavier kid than myself. He had a couple fights, so a little bit of experience, and a lot more than I did anyway. And when I stopped him, and he went down, and I went to go pick him up because I didn't really even understand all the rules of boxing. And I went to go pick him up, and the referee ushered me to the neutral corner. They called off the fight because I dropped him pretty severely with some headshots. And so when the decision was announced, and I'd heard, you know, it was the roar of the crowd, baby. Like, everybody was cheering for me. Like, it was different than the other cheers that usually go on throughout a fight. And after a fight, you'll get a nice round of applause here and there. But people cheered a little differently for me, maybe because I was so small. But, you know, again, I don't remember another fighter within a couple weight classes that was stopping people as regularly as I was. And the people really enjoyed that, so I kept focusing on my power. Great boxing ability. I could move and make things look good, but I concentrated on that power. And then when you know it's there, you always want to fall back on it, so you rely on it. So I get outpointed once in a while in those amateur fights. But, yeah. Well, that was the big, how the beginning sort of was with people cheered for me. It was amazing. I loved that feeling of being appreciated, where I don't think I was always struggling to get appreciation in life, being smaller, you know, just wanted to be appreciated. And I, you know, it's not like I had a billion friends. So it was really nice to have, to get a following right from day one.
I hope you don't mind, and you know how my show goes. I'm not going to let you get away with totally everything. You know, you kind of mentioned, you know, it was a little rough and tough being smaller, but you're not the only one in the sport. You look at a fellow IBF world champion, and Steve 2 Pound Forbes was born at 2 pounds, 2 ounces, kind of grew up small. You know, how hard was it for you, Scotty? Because I'm like you, I'm an introvert. I go and I shoot these events and I do the radio show and all this, but in my spare time I like to be by myself. How hard was it for you to overcome the aspect of being different, being bullied? Who was it that gave you the strength or the words of wisdom to persevere that aspect of adversity coming up as a young man?
You know, Don, I've looked back and I've tried to peg that out. I appreciate the compliments and stuff. And well, Stevie Forbes, if he was born at 2.2 pounds, I was born, I was 5 pounds. So I should call him out. We should do an exhibition match.
That'd be cool.
But yeah, where am I at here?
What was it like coming up?
Yeah,
being bullied or picked
that's
up?
Right. Yeah. So I found it from my days in grade one. From my days in grade one, there was, I don't know if I've ever told you the story, but they had in the winter time, they had a hill of ice and snow. It happens a lot in Canada where I live. So, but there's a thing of ice and snow. They play King of the Hill, and you know, they have big guys on top of that thing, like grade 2, grade 3, grade 4, all the way up to grade 6 on top of that hill. And every single recess, I would try my very best to get to the top without being, you know, knocked the hell over. I took a lot of bad falls, but I would never give up. I would never give up. So there was something in my brain that was a little bit cuckoo that, like, I shouldn't have actually been trying to, because these were kids who were so much bigger than me and stronger. But I would never give up. I would just keep doing it. It was like a flaw, one of the biggest faults. I would keep trying. And I think that, in terms of my growing up years, just growing up, there were moments that were really tough. But I always felt that God sort of inspired me, gave me some words, gave me this attitude inside, a little bit of that. You know, it's got to be God given, because I didn't give it to myself, and it was just in there. And I was able to harness some of that energy. And prove people wrong. You know, that was, you know, I might not be the most popular guy in the school, and maybe this group doesn't like me, or that group. Maybe I can't really talk to them very much, and these guys are the really good hockey players, and they're the sports guys. And, you know, but I always thought, you know, once I started in boxing and I had that, my first fight, and I did well, I knew at that point, one of my biggest motivations was just, I just wanted to become something, to become bigger, and in a sport. So I didn't feel like going into a lot of things like business or anything, but you know, just I found a sport and I was good at it, and I concentrated all my. Every capability I had, I worked. I would just work hard to get to the very top, and I wanted people to see what I became or would become, and I could envision greatness, or I envisioned being a good fighter. So I just saw it, and I think other than God giving me that inside, you know, my coach would always teach me some vision stuff. He's very good into mental imagery and see yourself up on that podium, see yourself getting this medal, see yourself becoming a world champion. And, so between God and my coach, Paul Horty, that's where that came from.
Yeah. You can't, you also can't, you can't overlook the heart and the sheer determination, you know, because will in life is tremendous. A lot of people, they don't understand what the will of life is. And you did it at a very, very young age. And, you know, that's why I like doing shows like this, because I hope my listeners, young, old, whatever they may be, look at life and take something from this, because you know, you had to deal with it at a very young age. Mine came later in life. You know, when I lost my leg and I'd been in a wheelchair for years and was told I would never walk again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? You know, you're not gonna tell me what I can and can't do. And I think it's something that derives from our heart. And it brings out the true character of who we are, because I didn't give up. You didn't give up.
Mm-hmm.
And we continue to fight, and we continue to prove the world or whoever it may be wrong, because it's not in us to give up or, you know, commit to something that we know is wrong. You know, see, you look at these tremendous moments in life and these little tidbits, and they create a person's character. Now, we talked about 1986. We talked about a lot of different things in your life thus far. You know, you go from 1986 to 1994, and Scotty Olsen got an opportunity of greatness. You got a chance of a lifetime. What did it mean for you to get that opportunity to fight for the IBO World Flyweight Championship? What did it mean for you to go in there against a tremendous warrior in Roger Espinola?
Wow. Oh, you know, Donna, I love you. Love your questions. You know, it's I really appreciate them. So for an answer to this, when I'm looking at the world title shot, I'd gone through some broken hands and some bad stuff that had happened before I got a chance to fight for the title. So like I had literally like doctors saying maybe it's a good idea, maybe don't do this anymore. I don't think your hands are going to hold up. I don't think this is it. I was succumbed to injuries all the time. I was not very often very healthy for quite a number of my fights. And so I asked the doctor, you know, I get a shot at the title, you know, as long as I pass this medical. And they were, doctors didn't, and family even. Family thought I should have gave up a long time before that. And then finally I get a shot at the title to have it in my hometown. I guess I could have won the title and brought it down to Vegas, but you know, I want to have some fights up in my home country, and so I defended it 5 times, I guess. But being a champ of that title, I wasn't getting, you know, I was number two in the world. Number two in the world isn't number one. I was number two. I wasn't getting a title shot. So it's not like the WBC champion and the IBF champion. You know, I'm trying to get the IBF title. It's not coming to me. So when I finally got a shot to fight for any title, like, you know, just give me something. Let me fight for it. I was blessed because, you know, I got a nice opportunity. But there was no way I was going to leave a fight. I was not going to leave a title fight as a loser. I was in it to win it. I was going to go for it. So yes, getting the opportunity is like, oh, it just like, oh my God, like, thank you. How much more gratitude can you show? You know, so I, the doctor said, okay, go ahead and fight. And I fought and I kept it, and then I'd never lost it. I just couldn't keep the weight down anymore. I had a couple of tough fights in between with a couple of draws and stuff, but I still defended it. And then I had to, I was stuck. I vacated the title, basically. Two guys that can make the weight fight for it. But that, just giving you opportunities. You know what? That, this is going to elevate me to where I think I should be. Like, I see all of my friends and people that I've trained with, and they've had title shots, and they've won championships. And why? I'm with the biggest promoter in the world, essentially. So why am I not getting the title shots? Because there isn't an available date on NBC or on CBS or something. Like there's got to be, why? I'm number two and I'm not the mandatory contender, so the champion doesn't have to fight me. So I'm not getting a shot. So I said, hell with it. Like I decided to keep my title and try to help make that title seem a little bit more important than a lot of people have said it is, or with its relevance to the other major world titles. But the thing, I was a champion of that, and I tried to be a proud champion, and I retained it as long as I was healthy and had lengths of time between my fights, because I had broken my hands, but I would heal up and I wouldn't give up. And you know, I think I've given that sanctioning body I think I've given them, you know, a little bit of a boost too. Myself, I was champion, and just at the same time, James Tolding was champion. So there was a few of us that were, you know. But I was so tired of seeing my dreams get dashed because I can't get a title shot. When I finally get a chance, and you would have had to, I don't know, you would have had to put barbed wire or something around me and my opponent to have me come out a loser in that one. There was no way I was going to lose that one. So it was a tough kid from the Philippines we brought in. And he was pretty bouncy, and that was a 12-round decision. So the boy went to 12 rounds with me. It was a competitive one-sided fight.
Yeah. You know, like you said, you got the title, and it was something special to you, and you defended it five separate occasions. You know, and that, my friend, is a feat in its own. You know, I had a buddy who is a blues legend, and mm-hmm. I watched him rise to stardom. And then one day I was walking down the street, and I seen him playing on the corner for tips.
Mm-hmm.
And I was baffled because this is a man who played with B.B. King and some of the greatest blues legends in the world. And I'm sitting beside myself because he's at the corner and he's playing for change. And I went up and I talked with him, and, you know, it kind of broke my heart. He's riding around on a moped and playing for change on a street corner. And a gentleman came into his life. A gentleman by the name of Rick Short.
Mm-hmm.
And within a short year and a half, Norman Jackson competed in the World International Blues Festival.
Oh.
Out of 14,389, I think it was 89 some odd groups that participated in this event.
Yeah.
Norman Jackson and the Norman Jackson Band took third. And he came on my show to talk about it. And he said, you know, I guess third isn't bad. And I told him, I said, Norman, I said, you won. He said, what do you mean I won? I said, bro, out of those thousands and thousands of other groups, you came in third. I said, that is winning. I said, that puts you in the top elite in the world. I said, so don't diminish what you did. Don't say I came in third and you didn't accomplish what you set out to do, because you truly did. And
yeah.
From that point forward, success found him.
Mm.
You know, the tremendous thing about life is we gotta treasure the opportunities that we get. We got to treasure the things that we put on our path. And not everything is always going to be that great walk. You know, we're going to have adversity. We're going to have things that sidetrack us. We're going to take the wrong turn here and there. But we ultimately find greatness. And you truly did in this sport, Scotty. You know, one thing that you brought up earlier, and I really wanted to get your take on it, because
mm-hmm.
we talk about mentors and different things in life and people that instill values in us. You know, there was that aspect between you and Al Ford.
Mm-hmm.
What was it about, you know, Mr. Ford that truly gave Scotty Olsen that push, that knowledge? What was it that gentleman in particular gave to Scotty Olsen?
Well, Another great question, Don. Thank you very much for asking me that one. You know, like with Alan Ford, you know, when you're young, you can be a little bit naive, or you can be just open to so many things, and you meet a baseball player, and then all of a sudden you want to try baseball. You meet a swimmer, you want to try swimming. You get somebody in MMA, you want to try MMA or judo, or some of the other stuff. So, you know, just very impressionable, and I was so at that time. So, had Al Ford ended up being a guitar player, maybe that's something I would have. No. No, I think we'll leave the music out of it. But so when I got in, when I met Al Ford, and he had such a positive vibe, and he was retelling stories of a couple of his fights, a couple that were from before when he fought Ken Buchanan, actually, and should have got the decision in that fight. So that was that, and Kenny Buchanan was the lightweight champion of the world, and Alan Ford was in the top 10 in the world at that time. So, you know, just as he had such a, what's the word for it? You have, when you have such a passion for something, and that passion that he had himself for the sport, and remembering some of his experiences, that just resonated with me and was passed over, and I wanted nothing more than to give it a shot. You know, I wanted to try. I just wasn't allowed for quite a while, so it took a lot of skipping school and my mom saying to get back into school. If you stay in school, I'll let you try boxing. That was an ultimatum that my mom had given me. So yeah, strange how it actually ended up working out, because I was hitting that heavy bag downstairs in my basement every day, and only with my right hand, because Rocky Marciano and Rocky Graziano, I had a boxing book, and there was always those two pictures. I think Graziano was crunching Tony Zale, and Rocky Marciano had his right hand on top of Jersey Joe Walcott. So those were two. All I wanted to do is throw my right hand. So I did that, threw my right hand every day, pretty much all day, skip school, and then what did Al Ford? He was kind enough to give a little something back, a little bit of, instead of saying, but thanks a lot for saying I was a good fighter, I appreciate it, have a good day. No, it was like, I want to talk to you. And he talked to me for a few minutes, you know, a little bit of time, and I was able to get a vibe from him. He gave something back to me that I don't think can, you know, it was just, I don't even know if he knows. Yeah, maybe he does now, because I've kind of told him how instrumental he was, and just meeting him and seeing a couple scars over his eyes, you know, seeing his nose wasn't exactly straight. Me wanting to be just like him when I grew up, it gave me a feeling, you know, had I not met him, then maybe I'd have jumped on a horse and be a jockey. Who knows? I don't know. I wouldn't have been a singer, though.
Well, we don't know that, Scotty. We don't know. You know? But there is a bad side to Scotty Olson, and I'm going to tell the world on you if you don't mind. Is that okay?
There's a lot of bad sides to me. There's several, so I'm just wondering which one you want to pick.
Oh, no. I'm not going to be too mean today, bro. No. You know, your family was kind of not very, you know, happy with where you wanted to be or what you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But they kind of accepted it a little bit. But then there was a side, a rebel side of Scotty Olson that had him skipping school, doing some things he wasn't supposed to do. And your mom kind of made a deal with you. You know, why don't you let the world know what the deal was between you and your mother for you skipping school. What did your mother offer you, Scotty, if you stopped skipping school and you kind of fell on the straight and narrow? What option did she give you?
Well, here's how it sort of went down. Whoops. I just had to do a... Sorry, I just dropped something. It's my fault.
Oh, you're
okay. Sorry about that, Don. My mom... So here I tried a handful of sports. The one that I really loved the most, because I'd been in swimming, I did competitive swimming. I enjoyed it, but, you know, it's swimming, you know, and I wasn't much of a winner at it. I, you know, got a lot of anywhere from third to fifth place and 10th place, you know, so it wasn't very, very exciting. And so I tried baseball, and I really loved the game. I loved doing it, but, you know, I'd have games, and instead of playing, I was sitting on the bench, and my family would be supporting me, not watching me not play. And I didn't like that, so I knew, and if I was in a team sport, and every time I would make a mistake, and I always made a mistake in a team sport because I was so petrified, I'd tighten up, I'd worry too much, so every time I would make a mistake, the whole team would suffer. And I didn't like letting people down. So finding the boxing part, just going into that. So here, I had a birthday. It was my 13th birthday, and my family kicked in and chipped in, and they bought me a heavy bag. And they set it up downstairs. And I lived in a townhome. So a townhome where, you know, you have a house sort of right next door to you, and we were friends with the neighbors, very good people, and we had the heavy bag downstairs and a deep freeze right behind that, so I would hit this heavy bag, and it wasn't a real tiny heavy bag, it was a pretty solid bag, but it would bang against the refrigerator, or sorry, the freezer. It would just make a lot of noise, so I probably could have got away with it if I didn't punch so hard, but I was pretty noisy. Oh, and I also had a little speed bag, but I didn't really do much of that because I wasn't into it. I didn't know how to do a speed bag, so I just, you know, bobble it once in a while. And but the neighbors told my mom that I was skipping school, and it had been going on for a period of a long time. Like we're talking from February up until the end of that school year, which was in June or so of 19. Well, it was about a period of 8 months actually, because it went from 81 into just before I got into 82, because I started in, I think, January of 82. And I started boxing about at that time. So my mom had said, you know, Scotty, you're not in school. I know what's going on. You're coming home. You're going to school, but you're coming back and you're hitting the heavy bag. You're missing your classes. And I know exactly what's going on. So Scotty, here's the deal. You'd be hitting this thing and skipping. And now it's getting worse and worse over the course of a half a year. And she said that while it's pretty obvious to me that you have more than just an interest in it, it seems like you have a bit of a passion for it. And I probably agreed with her. And she said, okay, if you stay in school and you go to school, I will allow you to try boxing. Because, you know, truthfully, if you have a mother, and here's your son, he's like 4'8", and he has no athletic ability, you know, you don't really want that son to be a boxer. Nobody sees that vision. They don't think, you know, especially a mom. So, but she held to her word. And even though I had no athletic ability, I go in there and then I realize I can take a shot and punch like a truck and it just became a wonderful story. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We know there's a bad side to you, Scotty.
Yeah, skipper.
Yeah. you know, it's wonderful to tell stories like this because people see you on television, people watch your fights on the internet, and it's tremendous. But to get the backstory of what created that world champion, what created this tremendous man and his walk, is really what enlightens my listeners, the world, the show, because it truly shows who you are. And that's one thing I love about life, is to share the truth and who the fighter truly was and what they overcame to get to the top. Because, like I said earlier, there's young kids in life, and there's even some young adults that don't understand that even though they're in a dark place or they're dealing with adversity, that you can still come up. You can always, not even just come up, you could fulfill your dreams. You, Steve Forbes, myself, we're three aspects that have shown the world that no matter what hand we were dealt, we always rose to the occasion. We never let an excuse hold us back. You know, there's a tremendous man that came into your life. And I think you were maybe, I don't know, I think maybe 17, 18 years old. And you had a legend come into your life by the name of Russ Anber. What did that moment mean for you? What did that opportunity mean for Scotty Olsen?
Well, Russell was sort of just getting into, he hadn't been into the boxing game for too long. Like, it wouldn't have been but maybe a 2 or 3 years prior to that, or maybe it was 4 or 5. So I started in 1982, and I'd met him in, I guess it was 1985 was when I met Russ Anber. So 85 was, I had just freshly jumped up from junior. We have a thing in Canada called intermediate, and I bypassed intermediate. So I went from junior to being senior Canadian championship in the year of 1985. And Russ Anber, he was the one that, he was a very, very nice guy. He was very knowledgeable. He was working at that time with a couple of great fighters, former WBO champion Otis Grant and Howard Grant, two both brothers, and he had a good boxing gym in Montreal. But he very, very nice man. And we'd always kibitz around a little bit, joke around, and he had called me, "You're the Bulldog." So actually, one of my favorite fighters back just when I started boxing was a guy named Frank the Animal Fletcher. So I have some cards that I made up for myself that said, Scotty Olsen, like a card that you can carry and give to people. You can run, but you can't hide. Scott the Animal Olsen, because I like Frank Fletcher. So Frank the Animal Fletcher. So he called me the Bulldog, and all the boys there, when I would go into the championship fights and some of these nice fights, like Lennox knows everybody, they'd woof, woof, woof. They'd bark on, as I walked into the rings at times, not every single time. But it was, it was so fun. And, I don't think there's been too many other people, Don, that are nicknamed Bulldog. In the boxing game anyway. I don't know if there any, and I am so grateful for that, because it's like you don't call yourself Lights Out, like James Lights Out Tony. Like that's already taken you. Nobody can take that Bulldog away from me. I'm not saying I'm like exactly like James Tony, but you just don't take his nickname. It's Lights Out, baby, and you don't take his nickname, and nobody's really taken mine. And if they did try to use it for a while, it didn't last. Where if you say Bulldog, you think of me most of the time, you wouldn't think of another fighter.
No, you think of you all of the time, bro. You're the one
you.
And only Bulldog. That's what's tremendous about it.
Thank you.
You know?
Yeah, thank you.
Well,
yeah.
You earn that respect, bro. See, that's what people need to understand. And it's different for me. I started in boxing, and then I correlated over into MMA, but... You know, boxing is a totally different type of family. And I'm not saying this to disrespect any of the MMA aspect, but the old school aspect of boxing. You know, just to give my listeners an idea and a better understanding of how it is, when Diego Chico Corrales, I shot his last fight, and then when he passed away, I stepped away from boxing because it hurt. You know, I've lost so many brothers in the sport, not because of the sport, but because of life tragedies. And I had known Diego since he was a little snot-nosed kid running around with us. And, you know, to get to shoot a fight of his in my hometown, and I hadn't seen him in a couple years, so it was a tremendous occasion. And then 3 days later, I get a call that he's no longer with us. So I stepped away, as you already know. And I started back shooting the youth. People had to beg me forever to shoot the youth. And I decided, you know, let's give it a shot. And I loved it. And that was probably some of the most memorable moments in my career. Was going back to shoot the kids. And trying to come back into the boxing world was almost like I had leprosy on the professional level. It was because the community is so tight that boxing felt like I had left them, that I had deserted them. And I know a lot of people really don't understand this aspect of it, but when you peel back the complexities of the sweet science and the people that are involved, it's something that you just can't walk right back into. You got to regain the trust. You got to regain. I can't even speak tonight. You got to regain the passion, and the sport has to give you the approval to come back in. And I know some people are probably going, what? But you have to earn your way back into boxing. And I earned my way back into boxing. And since you brought James Lights Out Tony and monikers, you know, I had him on my show one time. And out of the blue, I brought him on the air and he said, you know, I introduced him and he said, Dandy Don. And, you know, I laughed and he says, that's your name from now on. And, you know, everybody gave me a bad time about it. But when somebody like James Lights Out Tony takes the time to give you a nickname, I don't care what it is. That's what your nickname is. That's who
you sir.
Want.
You want to take that and run.
You
want
to take
that.
It to the bank.
That's right.
You know,
wow.
It's just, that's what I love about the older aspects of boxing, the true warriors of the sport. You know, I look back and I'm very blessed in life because I got to interview Joey Giambra, the uncrowned champion, fought from 1949 to 1963. The only reason he never got a title shot was because he refused to take a dive for the mob. And he was a tremendous, tremendous warrior, just like you, Scotty. You know, Scotty, I know there's a fight in your career, and it was your last fight.
Yeah.
I know it's a fight that you so wanted bad to run that one back. What was it that kept you from running that fight back? What was it that was instilled in you that wanted that moment again?
Another great question, Don. You know, looking back, I just love listening to your stories, too. I listen to you. No, I just love that. But, you know, for, how could I put it, where were we at there? What am I going to comment
about
on?
Your last fight about you wanted
the last one.
To
yeah.
rerun it. I said, what was
I
it?
I would have been.
Yeah, what was the burning passion in you that wanted you to rerun that fight?
Yeah, the only times that I've ever maybe not fought so good, or looking back, I realized, and being honest with myself, that the only time I ever lost or didn't fight that well was not because I wasn't good enough to be in there with any of the fighters that I've fought. You know, it was due to circumstance. I had some circumstances in that fight, and there was just circumstances. So after that fight, you know, it was horrible. It was horrible because nobody teaches you how. You know, so I hold a retirement party, so I have this big party and then from there, then I pulled the plug and we had a press conference and, you know, I had officially retired from the sport. And, you know, that I wasn't ready to leave at that point. So just wanted to go out a little bit better than that. But I got stopped at about 6th, 7th round, somewhere around there. And, it wasn't like, it was so strange for me because here I am, one of the tougher cookies. I could take a pretty damn good shot. And he hit me a couple times and so I'm on my ass and then I bounced up. And then the referee, after a few times of me getting back up, and I did always get up, and he called off the fight and was kind of being kind to me. But I wasn't stopping. But I just wanted to go out with a better effort than that, I think, John. I think I wanted and I deserved to go out with something. But, you know, yeah, I was protected. I think I was protected. God protected me. And had I not have broken my hand and had so few fights, I only had 40 pro fights. If I hadn't had all this time between the fights, I would have sparred a lot more. I would have had more fights. I would have been punchy. And, you know, I was pretty fortunate to have gotten through a real tough sport with as much as I was able to get to have still. You know, I was able. So, you know, did I wanted to end my career differently with a win, or at least like a hell of a bloody effort, not by getting stopped. That's for damn sure. So I was very, very heartbroken. So when I did the press conference and I had my retirement party, I wanted to fight again. And, Rocky Marciano, when he pulled the plug and he retired, he didn't make a comeback. And that sort of resonated with me, and I'm thinking, when Rocky retired, he didn't bother. He could have come out every time and had some fights, and he didn't. And as far as I know, anyway. So, he was like one of my idols. I really looked up to a lot of character that he had, and how he tried, he trained, and you know, Rocky. If you're Rocky Graziano or Rocky Marciano, you know, wish I would have had a chance to meet those boys.
Yeah. You know, Scotty, you searched after that moment, you searched in life for something that was gratifying to you. You tried several things, and you ultimately, because you have a love for communicating with people, you ended up taking a job at a car dealership.
Yeah.
And I know those moments in your life truly mean more than some of the other moments. And I think that's what I love most about you, is you appreciate your accomplishments. You don't look at anything as one is better than the other. You look at everything that you've accomplished, and you've held it near and dear to your heart. You know, you had an opportunity to meet Ryan Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, he was the son of Al Ford. You know, what was it like for you to have those two in your life? Because ultimately, you would go on to help, I believe it was Ryan, you know,
mm-hmm.
make his transition from MMA, where he was quite a tremendous fighter, but he stepped into boxing, but you were still there giving to the sport, being in the corner. What did it mean for you to still have that avenue in the sport, but through other aspects?
Yeah. Well, Don, thank you. Again, you're looking back, and I don't have to look back too far. You know, that boxing is quite a tight little network. And so here I'd been selling cars for about 10, 12 years straight. And during that time, you know, I wasn't really involved that much in boxing. You know, the odd time I'd go to the fights, but it certainly wasn't very frequent. And, when I would go to these fight cards and I'd actually go to one, I wasn't like I was really looked at very highly. Most of the kids didn't know who I was. And, you know, it was just a quiet atmosphere around me. Like, I wasn't saying, hey, Scotty Olsen's here. That was never like that. And so I had to earn my place a little bit back in that boxing scene again. As you were saying, very, very similar to what we've both been through. So I went through, I'm the youngest. I have an older brother. And I had a middle brother, and my middle brother died. So when he died, Ryan Ford, who I had known, but more so, you know, he's a beast. Like, those MMA guys are tough. So he was doing MMA and knocking guys out, and, you know, and always in a tough competitive fight. He wasn't afraid to fight anybody. I was kind of scared of the kid. Not a kid. He would have been about 30 at that time, and but I'd known him since he was just a little guy. You know, if I did happen to go to a fight, he was usually hanging out at the fights once in a while. So, and I'd seen him as he grew up in his teenage years a few times. And, you know, he is just a beast. And then he contacted me through Facebook, I guess, and asked if I would come down to the gym back in about 2015. So my brother had been diagnosed with a brain tumor, and he's not doing very well. And I got a chance to work with Ryan, so I had something to do on a daily basis to get my mind, you know, Ryan Ford and asking for my involvement to offer him a few tips. You know, I wasn't a full-time trainer or anything like that for him. I think I would have liked to have been. It just wasn't panning out properly with my health either. But I could go to the gym. I could offer them tips. And all of a sudden, I'm getting myself back into the sport. And people are opening up a little bit more to me from something that I strayed away from for a little while to focus on a car dealing or a car salesmanship career. Now I'm as a... as a person in the gym, I'm helping, giving tips, and I see the coaches try to do what I'm doing to help their fighters. but Ryan Ford, a true beast, he's into boxing right now. You know, he would do anything. I'm pretty sure within 3 week notice, he would have a bare knuckle fight, an MMA fight, a boxing fight. He's incredible. And he's fighting everybody. He's fighting everybody in the world. So having those two, Al Ford, Ryan Ford, you know, they have presence, and I love where they kind of came from, you know, and Ryan could be very, very he could be pretty darn proud of a lot of accomplishments, but he's still humble. You know, very down to earth. So I like working with people like that. You know, I like that. I like some of the things. Like I was the one guy who wanted to fight Prince Nassim Hamed. The first time I saw him go into the ring and be a show off, I wanted to knock his butt out so bad. And about at that same time, he had the fight with Kevin Kelly, and he was able to stop Kevin Kelly, I think, in that fight. And Kevin Kelly was a hell of a fighter, and I was a little bit lighter, so I gave up my chances of wanting to fight the Prince. But I like to be around kind of humble people, you know. They can win with honor, but you got to lose with honor too, and you know, that's so. And Ryan has that in him.
Yeah, he truly does. You know, Scotty, just an off the top question. Standard Wikipedia or Tapology question, but I want to know, and I can ask you because it's my show, bro.
Okay.
Top three most memorable moments in Scotty Olsen's career.
Yeah, there were some defining moments. And it wasn't even... The first moment was just knowing that in, like, whether it be 3 or 4 months that I had a chance to fight for the world title. When I found that out and we were kind of signed to fight and it was for a world title, I was really, you know, that not even having fought for it, having fought and won it was a different memory. But I can't tell you just the opportunity that I was going to get. Wow, I'm actually going to get a chance. You know, it wasn't Top Rank's fault. You know, I was ranked number 2 in the world, not number 1. And you can't force a champion to fight you if you're the number 2 contender. You can't force them to fight you. And nobody was fighting me. So, you know, there was a few guys that I think I could have fought back then that, I could have stepped up for Johnny Tapia. I could have stepped up somehow, maybe fought Mark Johnson, maybe. He was a great fighter. Tim Austin was another great fighter. Mark Johnson and Arthur Johnson as well. He was a hell of a fighter. So, you know, I wish I would have had some of these fights. That would have really, would I want them all? No, I wouldn't want them all, every single one of those fights. You know, but like Ray Leonard had lost a fight with Duran, and Hearns lost to Hagler, and Hagler, you know, so, but I think it would have really helped my, I would have loved to throw myself in there, and I wish I could have had some of those fights. I'm not sure why those didn't kind of pan out, but it would have been, I think there would have been more history to my career had I been able to have those fights. And they didn't materialize.
Yeah, but you still, to this day, are one of the most recognized, well-known aspects of boxing in the world as we speak. You're too humble to accept that, but you know, I know a lot more about you than you think you do. You know, and it's tremendous because you not only created a legacy, but you built a foundation for yourself, for your family. And what more can a man ask for in life? You know, a lot of times we look at life and we aren't satisfied. And sometimes that's not such a bad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's always great to still have that fire to burn. Let that passion live because it keeps us going. You know, Scotty, I'm going to kind of ask you one more question, kind of an off-the-wall kind of question, because I want to get a little bit deep perspective of a thought from a man that I look up to.
Mm-hmm.
you know, let's say, you know, like with Ford or whatever, you're closing up the gym. You know, you got all the lights off and you're getting ready to walk out of the door. And you look to the right and there's a mirror. And in that mirror, you get a brief reflection into the warrior, the man. Who does Scotty Olsen see?
You know, there's a couple different parts, Don, really. You know, when a moment like that, and I think we've all had moments where we've had some quiet time and just, you know, you can have, think yourself a little bit more or a little bit less the ego side of things, you know. Like I've tried so hard as a fighter to make sure I was around the right people, to make sure that I would maintain and not feel too high about myself, that I could always relate to people, you know, whether they were boxers or not boxers, if they were, you know, I just wanted to have it even keel. I didn't want to be better. But there's that piece of ego that it's a chunk, and I do have one, a very self-centered piece of myself that when I look in the mirror, and I think of myself just, you know, to be honest, a little, you know, like I was a few fights away from actually being in the big International Hall of Fame. So I think it was just a couple fights and taking fights at the right time that would have helped me. And so I think I know how good I was. And it's hard to say how good you are if you haven't had all the fights against all the fighters to have proven yourself. But I know how good I was. And I was really blessed, and I fought real hard. I didn't leave anything in the dressing room at any point. I fought with my heart, and I fought for fans. I fought for fans because I didn't want them to get bored. I wanted them to be excited to watch me fight. So instead of going on dancing around and jabbing around and all that kind of stuff, I went to work, and I bulldozed my way through the division. I did a pretty good job. I had some bad luck, but, you know, if you can see, if people took some time, as I can obviously see it, but the people took some time and just looked through some of the cracks and realized once they have some more information, they know what maybe some of the things that happened and all the stuff that transpired, maybe some of the things I went through. I truthfully feel that that they could maybe see what I look at in the mirror, which is, you know, I see myself as part of me is pretty normal, but I got that self-centered, egotistical kind of can be a bit of a prick there, my friend. And I can say, Don, I think I was pretty damn good. I don't like call myself a great fighter. You know, Ray Mancini put it to the media at one point. He said, you know, I never considered myself a great fighter. I just considered myself a good fighter who had great moments. Like, you can't beat that anyhow, and that's the best, you know. I love Ray Mancini.
Yeah, so do I. You know, that was a terrible tragedy in the sport. You know, that happened with Ray, you know, but he persevered. And see, that's another thing in life. Perseverance is very key. You know, I get to interview Livingstone Bramble, who fought
yes.
Mancini twice. And,
yep.
Man, I just look at these moments in life, and people thank me for coming on my show. This is what's so ironic. People thank me for letting them come on my show when it's, you know, myself that needs to thank you. Because I sit back and I look at all the memories and all the opportunities and all the fighters that I've shared, and I'm truly the one that's blessed. I'm truly the one that needs to thank you.
Wow.
That's the way it is, bro, because, you know, too many people in life don't ever want to give anybody else credit. And as we spoke earlier today, or yesterday, I believe, you know, I told you, the only time an individual should look down on somebody is when they're helping them up. And I'm a firm believer in that. You know, I think you're one of the most tremendous men I've ever met in the sport of boxing. You know, see, people need to realize that it always isn't your accolades that make you a great warrior or a great man. It's the pride, the passion, and perseverance that you've given, that you bestow, and that you continue to share with the world, Scotty. You're a tremendous
man. Thank you
man
so
in
much.
Walk. You know, Scotty, each and every time I have you on my show, it's always an honor and a blessing. I'm going to hand the mic over to you. If you want to give your lovely family a shout-out or just add anything to the show and its complexity. And
thank you again for those compliments.
You can let me finish, homie. You know, and you can give your social media sites a blast because I know everybody in Canada and the United States already follows you, but, you know, the floor is yours, champ.
Thank you, Don. It's certainly not maybe it's happened to other fighters, you know, without as much support, but I think my desire wouldn't have been as strong had I had not had this, some people that really supported me and some people that didn't support me. You know, those people that didn't support me, I used a lot of that negativity as positive motivation to prove them wrong, you know, to try to outdo what my expectations or what their expectations for me were. I always would try to do it, but for the people like my family, it's a pretty tight circle, and you know, you are in my circle, Don. I love you. And thank you. You know, my family really supported me. They might not have wanted me to continue, of course, going pro and all that other stuff. That was just my own fantasy land, but I was going to force that to become a reality somehow. And you don't get there without God, man. You just I can't tell you who to ever believe in. It could be this or that or whatever, you know. But I know what I believe in, and that has helped me. God has helped me to achieve, and to give me that toughness, never die kind of attitude, and He gave it to me. It's sort of like a fault. It's having a fault. Sometimes you can have some of these, you can have, if the going gets tough, you're going to quit all the time. Or the going's going to get tough and you're never going to quit. They're both very equal. They're both nobody's faults either. It's just the way it goes. So it's hard to take all the credit for having some heart. But I'd like to thank my family. I'd like to thank Top Rank, you know, Top Rank Boxing. Hopefully there's I hadn't talked to them for about a year and a half. And, they just helped guide me. You know, Bob Arum was great. Bruce Trampler was a complete rock star. I had B. Samuels as a publicist. He got me onto radio shows. I became more popular in Las Vegas than I was in Canada. Just, I was on all the radio shows and I was in the paper and people love coming to see me fight. I got the Las Vegas Top Rank Boxing Las Vegas Fighter of the Year award. You know, so I'd like to thank Top Rank for all their, and it doesn't, and I wouldn't have stepped in the ring had it not been for people to fight for. Sure, you want to help your family and yourself and maybe create some goals for yourself, but I like being an entertainer, and I enjoy people watching me fight. And I wanted to make sure I never laid down in any fights, like not quit laying down. At least I don't think that would have ever happened, but you know, now I look back, I didn't get quite a few fights, and if had I had those fights, I wouldn't have given up on in any of those fights, and I could end up not being able to speak very well. So I've been blessed, you know, for the things that didn't happen, it's probably a blessing that it didn't.
I hear you, champ. Where can my listeners that would like to follow you, where can they find you on social media, Scotty?
Well, I'm on Facebook. So I have Facebook. So I don't know. I guess it would just be under Scotty Olson. Should be under Scotty Olson. And then there's Instagram. No, hang on a second. The other one is called the Twitter account. I have a Twitter. I'm not a very good Twitterer. But I bulldog _12, I think it is. And I think it's the same Bulldog 12 at what do you call those other guys? Instagram people. Bulldog 12. That should be me.
Okay.
That's the one with I don't know. I can't remember how many fans I have on that page. I couldn't tell you. But there's lots on the Facebook one.
Oh yeah, you're definitely loved by the world, brother. You know.
It's funny. Did you notice like Facebook? I can't find enough room to fit people on Facebook, and you get Instagram. So on Instagram, every time I post something on Instagram, I lose 3 or 4 followers.
You know, I do know a Canuck that you need to make room for if you find space on your page.
Yeah.
There's a good brother of mine up there in Canada by the name of Brian Halderson, and one of the truest brothers I've ever met in my entire life, and he's a huge fan of yours, and I love that guy to death. You know, there's a lot of people in Canada that I hold near and dear to my heart, and he happens to be one of them. So if you can find a little space on your page for him, that would be greatly appreciated.
I will do that.
That would make his day. You know, Scotty,
absolutely.
I love you, bro. I love what you did in the sport. I love what you continue to bring to life. You know, from everybody. You know, everybody shared the show tonight, and it made me feel. It made me feel good, to be honest with you, because I like sharing the sport that made me who I am. And I like letting people hear the path that you had to go through to find greatness, to find who you are. With that being said, Scotty, I can't wait till the next show, brother. I really can't. We'll peel back some more layers. Maybe the next show I'll make you cry. No.
You know, I think we're getting there. You're pulling out some of the questions, the tough ones now. Like, I didn't want to answer the other. You gave me three of my best moments, the most memorable moments. I only mentioned one and kind of went on with it. I didn't forget the other two. I just wasn't so sure I could say them without crying. So.
That's fine, Scotty. You know, brother, I truly appreciate you sharing yourself with the world this evening. You know, we'll have you back on in about a month or two, and we'll share some more of the Bulldog. And you know, we're gonna keep you going until they put you in the International Hall of Fame. How about that, brother?
Okay, I would be in on that. Let's keep bugging them.
Yeah, we got to. Paul Verlin said to say what's up, so I said I would do that. Paul's another tremendous
so cool.
man. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Scotty, you're recognized by the whole whole sport. And it's such an honor for me to have you on the show. Thank you once again. Tell the family thank you. You have
thank
a good
you.
Night.
Thank you, Don. You are a rock star. Thanks for putting in all this that you do into the sport and into the MMA. And you're an incredible man, and thank you for giving us a forum to tell our stories.
Oh, it's my honor, brother. Thank you. Awesome. You have a good night. I appreciate
you. Yeah, you too,
Don. God bless you. Thank
you.
Love you, bro.
God bless you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, and that was the Bulldog, Scotty Olsen. On that note, I want to thank my sponsors, Finish MMA, with Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire, with Jacob Stishran and Juan Ramirez, the86ers.net, with Alfred and Freddie. And last but not least, Bite Me Mouth Guards. On that note, have a good night, and God bless.
Rhymes not to be known, yet still on my grind, never stop, just to be showing you how I live. Out in the lot, getting my name out, never needed.